I have the pleasure to be sitting with one of America's most distinguished Shakespearean scholars. And, of course, the reason he's American is because he's teaching here in America. But the reason he's distinguished is that he's British. Peter Holland, the Shakespeare professor at Notre Dame University, is sitting here with me now. And why he's sitting with me, I have no idea.
I didn't really know either, except it seemed like a good way of spending lunchtime. You are, of course, absolutely right. The British are naturally distinguished.
Yes.
We imbibe it with our mother's milk. That's
indeed
part of our style. And we all end up speaking in a very upper-class English accent.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 337, Professor Peter Holland. A lot of you true Shakespeareans out there might know my guest today. In addition to holding the McNeil Family Professor of Shakespeare Chair at Notre Dame University and being the former director of the Shakespeare Institute at Stratford-upon-Avon, Professor Peter Holland also served as consultant on Reed Martin's and my irreverent reference book, Reduced Shakespeare, The Complete Guide for the Attention Impaired Abridged. Peter and I were able to catch up in person recently for the first time in years, and he was gracious enough to let me turn my microphone on and begin our conversation by telling me where he's from.
I'm from North London.
Okay.
And went to school in London and then went up to Cambridge as an undergraduate. In England, we say went up to. You go up to university.
Right.
Just as we don't major in things, we read things.
You read
and
things.
I actually think that's a crucial difference. Americans don't really read anything. No, that's not fair. If any of my students are listening, I know, I love you. I know that you do read things, especially when I tell you to.
Well, in addition to, I mean, we met because Reed and I, because Adam had a thing, did a two-man version of Rap Othello on Notes and Queries with Clive Anderson back in the early to mid-90s. And you were there, I think, as the responsible opposing viewpoint, as the distinguished, educated person to put our little silliness in perspective. Is that right?
That's about right. But I'd seen the complete works already. I'd seen it in L.A.
Yeah.
And loved it. And there I was, wow, live in the studio with the members of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I really came out totally thrilled.
Well, and then we chattered over beers with you, with the three of us and Clive, afterwards in the BBC pub.
And then met up in Cambridge thereafter.
Yeah.
And then came that marvellous moment when some years later, you got in touch because you were doing the Shakespeare bio book.
Yes. Exactly.
And you wanted to make sure that the gags were real gags and not just because you got things wrong.
And you were there to make sure we got it right.
Or at least as right as you wanted it to be.
Right, as right as, yes. All the mistakes in that book are absolutely yours.
Yes, thank you. I take full responsibility. I'm really sorry.
Well, and then, I've seen several productions at the National Theatre over the years, and in almost every time there's an essay by you.
Yeah.
In there. This is, not only are you teaching Shakespeare here in America at Notre Dame University, you are helping theatergoers, helping artists, helping lay people understand it. That seems to be part of your gig.
I mean, that's absolutely true. The other bit of it is, of course, that I'm totally stage struck, and it's a way of getting free tickets, and it's usually a way of getting into rehearsal as well. And the reason why you come across my program notes, as we call them in the UK,
right.
You call them a kind of, you know, a bit of stuff in the playbill. The reason why you find them at the National is that the artistic director of the National, Nick Heitner, was one of the first people I'd ever taught in Cambridge.
Mm.
And so we've stayed in touch ever since. And every time he does a Shakespeare production, he asks me to write the program note. And we usually spend a kind of good long day talking about the play and trying to make sense of what he's planning. And I see my role as not telling him, why don't you do this? But he'll try out an idea and I'll say, yeah, but so-and-so did that. Do you want to do the same thing?
Right.
Yes, but if you do that, have you thought about what effect that has on the other bit of the play and that kind of thinking? Yeah. So we bounce ideas around, which for me is just sheer heaven.
Is it? Because that's... that's the fun, for me, the fun part of working on any sort of play is these kinds of conversations. What could it be? What will it be? What are we, what's been done before and how can we do something new?
But it's also because what then happens for me is that mysterious moment at which Nick in the rehearsal room manages to make those ideas into a reality.
Yeah.
And people like or dislike his productions, but nobody ever accuses them of being unintelligent. Mm. There is a kind of active, critical, creative work going on there that is really rare, even amongst great Shakespeare directors. And I really think he is a great Shakespeare director.
Well, and some of that has to be attributed to you because he's your student.
No, people come with native wit and ingenuity. one of the great pleasures of being in Cambridge was you know, all those people I taught when they were undergraduates who've gone on to, you know, moderately distinguished careers like the Nick Heitners, the Sam Mendeses, the Tilda Swintons, the Rachel Weisses of this world.
The Stephen Frys.
And Stephen Fry, yes. Yeah. I actually have a moment of a guest appearance in Stephen Fry's, one of the volumes of his autobiography. There I suddenly am. I was reading along and, ooh, that's me.
Is this the latest one? I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, there's just a moment of my turning up. We still keep in touch. And of course, I mean, here are these amazing people who have gone on to astonishing careers, all of which I could see coming because they are just clever, clever people. Not bad clever, good clever.
Right.
I mean, they think intelligently. They work in ways, even as when they were undergraduates, that was already professional, that was already so creative.
Is that... I'm answering my own question. Is that... It's just because they're English, right? No, it's not. Not everybody in Cambridge was like that.
No, it's because they're special.
Because
you get a higher instance of those kinds of special people in places like Cambridge than you do elsewhere. I'm sorry, that's nothing to do with the kind of mystique of Oxbridge. It's just they are very, very good.
Yeah.
And so they end up in Oxford or Cambridge.
Well, and you may not know this, but you make a guest appearance in the special thanks of his book on poetry called An Ode Less Traveled. He thanks you.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's exactly an example of why... I mean, here is Stephen Fry, who really should have been a school teacher in an English public school, i.e. an American private school, turning into kind of Mr. Chips or the Browning version or all those appalling kind of sentimental things about the aging teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've ever seen the kind of comedy quiz program he does in
QI.
QI.
Yes.
I mean... That is Stephen the schoolmaster.
Yeah.
Yes, who really should have a cane and a gown and would enjoy beating people. No, I didn't mean that.
Well, I bet he would, actually, given reading some of his autobiographies. Now, you said you were stage struck. Are you stage struck because you wanted to go on to the Wicked stage, or is that an extension of the work you do with Shakespeare?
I was stage struck as a kid, and it's still... I don't understand how somebody does what they do on stage. I cannot act. People often say, you know, oh, nice voice, you know, surely you were an actor. No, I can't do it. I can't be somebody else. I can be me reasonably well, but I can't turn into somebody else. And I'm still struck by that extraordinary process by which an actor becomes an other, turns into that character.
Right.
And it's mysterious, it's magical, and it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
When it works, it's special.
Well, it brings... I mean, this is the whole thing they say. You know, Shakespeare should not be read. He shouldn't be read silently. He should be spoken out loud. And that's what seemed to be part of what you do.
That's absolutely true. But it's also about Shakespeare should be fun. Shakespeare should be exciting. I mean, I only have one rule. The only bad Shakespeare is boring Shakespeare. I don't care if you're doing it in spacesuits or doublet and hose.
Yeah.
Either version can be equally boring or equally exciting.
Yes, right.
And I want to go to something that excites me, that entertains me. I mean, I grew up going to the theatre because my parents went to the theatre.
Yeah.
Neither of them had ever been to college. I'm first generation going to college in the family.
Wow.
They ran a shop. They hated running the shop. It was a way of earning a living.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, the excitement was you shut up the shop, you went into the West End in London, and you went and saw a show. And for them, it didn't matter if it was a musical, a comedy, Shakespeare, whatever. And they started taking me. And it was... I mean, they enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because I, of course, loved going to things like that with my parents.
Yeah.
But I also found that what excited them was what gave me a buzz. And that buzz has never gone.
Go!
Zooks! This is Connor McCreary, the co-creator of Kill Shakespeare, the fantabulous comic book. And you, good sir or madam, are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Rather.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In June of 2013, you can see us in Columbia, Maryland, in the U.S., and in the U.K. In May, June, and July of 2013, you can see us in Barnstaple, Solihull, Hereford, Harlech, Great Yarmouth, High Wycombe, Camberley, Surrey, Hastings, East Dulwich, Aberystwyth, Southport, Lincoln, Barnsley, Barrowin, Furness, Leeds, Ayr, Stirling, South Shields, Musselburgh, and London for 4 weeks at the Leicester Square Theatre in July and August. Also, we'll be visiting two other countries this summer and fall of 2013, as well as playing more U.S. venues. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com, click on the link to subscribe, and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. Now, I want to tell you about some lovely news we got this week. The UK newspaper The Telegraph, which, according to a friend of mine, is the paper the posh people read, just named the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast as one of its top 10 podcasts, saying, quote, "It's to the company's great credit that the RSC podcast remains a bright, breezy, and entertaining affair, well stocked with interviews, features, and excerpts from the shows, even after 350 episodes. Well, that is very, very nice. It's always nice to get a little public recognition, so I want to share this with all of the RSC guys and all of my friends and guests who've spoken to me for the podcast over the last almost 6.5 years. I absolutely could have done this without you, but it would not be anywhere near as good or as fun. The Telegraph singled out a few of our recent episodes, including my interview with RSC actor John Schwab in episode 334. Now, John's about to open in the European premiere of David Henry Wang's play Yellowface at the Park Theater in Finsbury Park. In true RSC style, John will be playing 25 different parts. Yellowface runs from May 23rd to June 16th, 2013, and for tickets, you can go to parktheater.co.uk. And now back to my conversation with Professor Peter Holland, who had said that the buzz and enjoyment of going to the theater with his parents never left him. So I tried to ask him the same question in a different way. Is that how you came to Shakespeare? Did you come to Shakespeare through the theater, or?
I came to Shakespeare through the theater long before I started reading it. One of the few LPs. Do you remember LPs? They were kind of round, black, flat things that yeah. scratched easily.
Yes.
The hipsters call it vinyl now.
I know, but those of us who grew up, you know, with them, one of the few LPs we had was actually of Olivier doing speeches from Hamlet and Henry V. And of course, I learned to mimic them, so I can still do. Bits of Henry V in proper Olivier fashion, you know, with the voice.
So you can do your voice reasonably well, and you can do his reasonably well.
But I can only do it by parodying Olivier.
Right.
And then I saw the Olivier films, the three great movies that he made, the Hamlet, the Henry V, and Richard III, that were regularly on screen in London in a cinema on Regent Street called the Academy Cinema. Mm. Every year it used to show those three Olivier Shakespeare films. And then I was seeing Shakespeare live on stage. I mean, one of the first Shakespeare productions I remember seeing was Othello at Stratford-upon-Avon, starring Paul Robeson opposite Sam Wanamaker as Iago.
Wow.
When I was 9. And it stuck with me. And so, of course, I didn't have any idea of reading Shakespeare at that stage. It was about seeing something that was thrilling in the theatre.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that we all need to do, I mean, this is my kind of message to take away, folks,
okay.
that you need to think about.
Right.
We think we shouldn't take our kids to Shakespeare until they're at least in high school. Too late. Take them to the theatre as early as you can.
Yeah.
Children live in a world in which most of what adults say is incomprehensible to them. So when they go and see a Shakespeare play, the fact that they don't understand a lot of what is being said on stage doesn't trouble them at all.
Yeah.
My daughter went to her first Shakespeare production when she was 3.5. We took her to Midsummer Night's Dream, done by a wonderful British company, Northern Broadsides, led by Barry Rutter. Barry is a friend. Jessica knew Barry. At the end of the show, when Puck has the epilogue and says, "Give me your hands if we be friends, and Robin shall restore amends," she reached out her hand.
Yeah.
At 2.5 hours into a show, she was still listening and responding to what she heard.
Wow.
And it's not because she's super smart. Well, she is. She's my daughter. Of course she's super smart. I'm immensely proud of her.
Yes.
Come on.
Right.
But
yes.
It's because she was excited by what she was seeing.
Yeah.
And that's what we owe to our kids. Take them to the theatre when they're young.
It's true.
And you mentioned that the Stephen Fry being this could have been the stereotype of the Mr. Chips, the aging sad professor. You have dodged that stereotype as well. You are so busy. You were telling me about your schedules. You're always traveling to this and that. You're on the board of this, the advisory council of that. How are you able to maintain that schedule? And what are all the things that you are involved with? All the other Shakespeare projects you're involved with?
How do I do it? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
But there are moments of crashing and thinking
and burning.
And burning. And why am I getting on a plane going here or there or whatever?
Yeah.
Why? Because it's fun.
Yeah.
And because I only take on doing things that I know I'm going to enjoy doing in some way,
yeah.
Even if it's just an excuse to go and meet a friend somewhere across the world.
Yeah.
One of the things nobody ever told me about getting into Shakespeare studies is you get to travel.
Mm.
And quite literally, I have traveled the world because people in Japan or South Korea or Australia or wherever have said, would you come and give a lecture? And I think, yeah. I mean, you'll pay my flight. I'm on the plane doing what I love doing. And
yeah.
Watching Shakespeare around the world is a part of that.
Yeah.
So I do it because, also, I think we have a responsibility. The academics can appear as though they only want to talk to each other. And sometimes we indeed do.
Mm.
But we also want to keep telling the rest of the world why Shakespeare matters. And he does matter. And I don't mean he's the only person who ever wrote a good play. Might be true, but no. But because the plays are infinitely transformable
yeah.
into something that matters. And part of the exciting Shakespeare production is the one that tells you something about yourself
yeah.
that is in the here and now of that production and that will tell differently a Japanese audience who they are and tell an Australian audience something different as well. In other words, Shakespeare isn't everywhere the same. Everywhere, he's different. And that's what's so exciting. These are the plays that are more transformable, metamorphosable, whatever, if that's
right.
a real word. If not, it is
well,
now.
You would know. Yeah.
It is now. Than any other plays in the canon.
Mm.
Nobody else can write text that can be remade in quite this way.
I love that notion that he's not the same everywhere. He's different everywhere, and that's why he's great.
And you notice it very much when you go to productions, as I quite often watch productions in foreign languages. And, of course, in Germany, there is a tradition of one famous great 19th-century translation, the one by Schlegel and Tieck.
Right.
But, in fact, when people put on Shakespeare productions, they often commission new translations. And that gives them the opportunity to make the play differently new, because the new translation is the one that rethinks the language into the context of the performance. It's trying to be true to Shakespeare and, at the same time, trying to make Shakespeare different.
And true to the moment.
Absolutely. Robert Lepage, the French-Canadian theatre director, says the only way you can be true to Shakespeare is by betraying Shakespeare. You have to betray him to be true to him. That means you don't think of yourself as a priest at the shrine.
Right.
You think of yourself as somebody who reads this play that just dropped through the letterbox that day, and you're going to remake it into, yeah, that's the play I need to do now.
Right.
And if there is no drive for the director that explains why this is the necessary play for me now,
yeah.
don't do it. Just don't bother.
Well, and this is the problem with I see Shakespeare festivals all over where they have to do, all right, well, we got to do Henry V again. Anybody got an idea?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my God, the pressure of that.
And that's awful. And
yeah.
we all know there's, and we see those productions where everybody's trying their hardest. And I don't mean for a moment that they're being lazy.
Or insincere.
Or they're certainly not being insincere,
yeah.
but nothing is making it real for them.
Right.
Nothing is making it urgent for them.
Well, but what you said, that quote of Lepage, is that's a new answer to the question that we always get, which is, people say the complete works of William Shakespeare are British, and they go, well, are Shakespeare scholars horrified by what you're doing? And yet they are not, I think, for the reasons that you're saying.
Oh, it happens all the time, not only in terms of your work. Yeah. I think of it's still the case when I show my students something like Baz Luhrmann's William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet, you know, the one with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. They often write, Shakespeare professors hate this film. And I say to them, find one. You know, give me some evidence. They assume we dislike it because it's exciting and modern and MTV and all the rest of it. In fact, we love it precisely because it's like that, because it's finding its own immediacy.
Yeah.
So we actually have to fight against what people assume we're like. Mm. Surely professors are really crusty old people, you know. as Tom Lehrer used to say, ivy-covered professors in ivy-covered halls. Some of us are like that, but some of us aren't.
You know, you mentioned Tom Lehrer. Not only do we share this love of Shakespeare, but we clearly have the same pop cultural footnotes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's terrible, isn't it? Because
it is.
You know the line, before I'm going to quote it. That's the difficulty.
we were talking earlier that you are the piranha brother of Shakespearean professors.
Yeah, we run the other operation.
You are tough but fair.
Always tough. Sometimes fair.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your distinguished British accents via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Rude Mechanical Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Laura Dreyfus. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Connor McCreary, the co-author and co-creator of the most excellent graphic novel, Kill Shakespeare. I'll have a lengthier conversation with Connor in a future podcast. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 337/1011 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Please keep saying it every week. This podcast is now going to finish with the line, take your children to the theater.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.